Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is sponsored by the Digital Marketing Institute, helping over 10,000 professionals worldwide to fulfill their potential in a variety of exciting roles, from growth hacker to social media specialist. As you know, digital is transforming the way we live, work, and play. And the Digital Marketing Institute can help you to develop the essential skills that you need to succeed. Visit dmipostgrad.com, that is dmipostgrad.com, to download a brochure and kickstart your digital career today.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very, very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a speaker, advisor, best-selling author of multiple books such as Engagement from Scratch and The Audience Revolution, and he is an entrepreneur. He is the founder of Fire Pole Marketing and Productive Inbox, and the host of the Business Reimagined podcast. He's also the creator of training programs such as Audience Business Masterclass and the Course Builders Laboratory, which have collectively trained over 3,000 online entrepreneurs. In just a few years, Firepole Marketing hit revenues of seven figures, and my guest has created a worldwide team of over 20 people who support a community of over 40,000 entrepreneurs. Now, let's hack Danny Eney. I want to thank today's sponsor because they are Schoolhouse, the branding brand. Have you heard of Schoolhouse? Schoolhouse is a New York-based and globally inspired brand design agency. When subjective experiences challenge you as an individual, they dare you to take creative risks and ask individuals to define the collective versus the collective defining the individual. Life and experience will serve as your schoolhouse. This is why Schoolhouse is about finding your brand truth and not just your brand story. At Schoolhouse, it's not only what they do, it's how they do it that makes the biggest impact. From authenticity, collaboration, and expression, they keep Schoolhouse sharp, excited, and honest about the work that they do. And they know the true value of client relationships based on quality and trust. Learn more at weareschoolhouse.com, and you can follow them daily through Instagram at schoolhousenyc. Again, to find out more, go to weareschoolhouse.com today. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have another very, very special guest that I met way back in the Philippines at the beginning of this crazy podcast journey. Danny, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Danny, let's jump straight into this.
Let's do it.
As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Getting back up. I think a lot of people romanticize the entrepreneurial journey and pretend it is or should be easier than it is. And so they get knocked down and that tells them to give up. And when something screwy happens that I'm not happy about, I always try to act from the place of, okay, you know, what next? What's next? What do I do with this? What is my best outcome here? Yeah, I think that's it. It's just always about being like, what's the next move that gets me the best result from where I am today?
Excellent. Is this something innate within you, Danny? Have you always, like, growing up, would something not go your way and you were just, okay, now what's next? Or is this something you had to kind of evolve into during your journey?
It's a bit of both. I'd always get upset and, you know, have my little personal internal tantrum. It used to take days or weeks. Now it takes, you know, minutes or hours, or, you know, rarely days if it's like really, really bad. But it's, you know, it's not about changing who you are. It's not about not getting upset because, you know, I mean, that's great in theory, but things are upsetting. It's about moving past that as quickly as you can to what am I going to do next? And that's a learned thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I love that you can now overcome things in minutes.
Well, that's sometimes.
Is that a bit on the positive pushing it side?
Well, no, I'll tell you what, it depends on the context. If I'm in a context where I'm working with my team or with clients, basically if I'm in a context where other people are looking to me, I get over it a lot faster than if I'm frustrated and on my own.
Wow. That's interesting.
Because, you know, what choice do you have?
That's true, but oftentimes we struggle with it more when the context is that people are looking to you because they think that they are supposed to always have the right answer.
There's a technique to solving a problem when you feel stuck and you say, you know, if I was someone who knew the solution, what would it be? And I think being in front of people who expect you to know the solution, it helps force you into that. Like, you know, and I'll have my moments. I had a, you know, I did a one day VIP day with a private client about a month ago. And she came in, we sat down, talked for like 45 minutes about what's going on in her business. And my first thought was like, oh shit, I have no idea what to tell her. Like, this is a business I don't know anything about. It's an industry that I don't understand. Her context is a little bit weird. What am I going to do? But I was like, okay, you know, let's get out of my head for a moment. You know, I know what I'm doing. What is the low hanging fruit? You know, what if I had to capitalize on any opportunity here for her, what would it be? And, you know, that's where we started and we had a really productive day. But if someone had emailed me that problem, I would have been like, I don't know, what am I going to do? But like, you know, you're in the context, people are looking to you, you'd better come up with something. And so you do.
I like that. So can you try and, are you saying, would you, from a consulting perspective, and it's true, like when we have a consultant tell us something, they are the person who like kind of has the solution, right? And then it seems easier, but can we do that to ourselves? Can we be the consultant to ourselves and step out of it? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're...
We can. Yeah, we can. It's easier when there actually is someone else because it forces you, but we can do the same thing for ourselves. You know, you can go for a walk and kind of consciously tell yourself, okay, you know, I'm upset and I'm frustrated, but right now sulking is not constructive. This is a problem that needs solving. So if I were to approach, how can I approach this problem? And it takes some really conscious, because the thing is we mentally cling to how things should have been. And a big part of the leap is letting go of what should have been and saying, okay, how do I work from what actually happened, from what actually is?
Yeah.
Right? Like we get hung up, but it's not fair. It wasn't supposed to be this way. I shouldn't have had to work this weekend because this and that was supposed to have been done. I planned for this. But it's like, okay, that didn't happen the way I wanted for whatever reason. And I do have to work this weekend. So how am I going to do it most productively?
Yeah, that is probably such a defining characteristic of an entrepreneur that actually goes somewhere and one that doesn't, is the one that doesn't blame external sort of things. It doesn't matter, right? It's irrelevant at this point. Mm-hmm. It has to be dealt with and you have to do it. Because nobody else will unless you do.
Absolutely.
I love it. All right, Danny, there seems to be a time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make something big and some difference in the world, or as mostly seems to be the case with my guests, they find that they simply cannot work for somebody else. Could you tell me which side of the fence you fall on and when you discovered this about yourself?
I would say neither. I don't think I fall into either of those categories because it implies the default state being growing up and getting a job and having a career path and one day waking up to, I'm going to quit my job and be an entrepreneur. And so, you know, the impetus is I can't work for somebody else or I have a calling, a vision, whatever. And neither was the case for me. I quit school when I was 15 to start my first business. I was always an entrepreneur. That was my default state. So like the question I might have to answer is like, you know, what is the rationale for going and getting a job? And I don't have one.
Wow. You kind of gave me goosebumps there. You said it with such conviction when you quit school at 15 and started your first business. What was this business?
Oh, you know, when I say that, people are like, oh, so were you one of those kids who could like hack into the Pentagon? No, I wasn't. I had a lot more gumption than ability at the time. I knew some HTML. So, you know, anyone who's at all computer literate knows that that means nothing. Yeah. But I was like, I could build websites. So I was going to quit school and build websites. And so I walked door to door from store to store, like the retail shops, asking, do you need a website? Being too young and inexperienced to realize that the clerk at the counter is not the person who makes that decision. And I never got any results, never sold anything. But a few months later, I'm sitting with a friend and we're playing a video game with his little sister. She was 7 years old. It's one of these educational titles. And he says, you know, I'll bet you could build something like this. And I'll tell him, you know, I'll bet I could. Now, I don't know why I said that. I had none of the skills to do that. But we find the box. I call up the company. I get a meeting with the CEO. And this is one of these things that, like, in hindsight, I'm like, how did I do that? But at the time, it didn't even occur to me that it was a big enough deal to, like, I literally don't remember how I did it. But I got the meeting. I walk in there and I tell him, I have a business proposition for you. I think I can build the games that you're going to sell. And I tell him, you know, my mom has a degree in psychology. I tell him, I've conferred with a psychologist. And I've come to the conclusion that if you want kids to really learn, they've got to be having fun. And the learning has to happen in the background. Now, what he could have said was, no kidding, I've been doing this for 10 years, get out of my office. But instead of that, he opens a drawer, he pulls out a document, he blows on it, it's like, and a cloud of dust flies off it. He says, this is a script that I wrote for a game 8 years ago. Why don't you build it for us and we'll sell it? And I tell him, sure, that sounds great. And he says, how are you going to build it? And I didn't know how to build a game. I had no programming skills. I had a friend who knew Visual Basic. I thought maybe he'd teach me. So I tell him, I'm going to build it in Visual Basic. And he tells me, isn't that like reinventing the wheel? Why don't you build it in Director? So I tell him, look, if we're going to be working together, then obviously I have to adapt to match your business practices. I'll build it in Director. We shake hands. I go home. I open up Google, which is like brand new at the time. I type in, what is Director? And that was like my first, you know, I worked on that thing for a couple years, restarted a couple times. It never saw the shelves because it sucked. But I did a bunch of contract work for them. That was like my introduction to real business. And I bounced around half a dozen different startups before kind of arriving at where I am today.
That's awesome. That's a great story. I can't believe I didn't know this about you. That's awesome. All right, let's move on to work, Danny. Every blog post now, right? Every expert talks about the 80-20 rule. Do 20% get 80% of the results? Do what you're good at, delegate the rest. We've all heard this so many times. Danny, can you tell me something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
I can tell you lots of things, but I want to, first of all, I don't agree with the 80% rule the way people take it usually.
Neither do I.
I think usually they take it as a rationalization for being lazy. It's like, you know, I can do 20% of the work and get 80% of the results. What they miss is that the difference between mediocrity and excellence is in the last 20%. And going that extra mile is what makes the difference. And often going that extra mile is what builds the competence to be able to do the rest in a reasonable amount of time. Like, you can work smart but not hard, but sometimes you've also got to work hard. Like, working smart but not hard doesn't mean not working at all, right? So I just want to say that because
I like it.
There is a truth to the Pareto principle, of course, but yeah. I think people take it the wrong way.
Yeah, you're right. It's totally a rationalization for being lazy.
So that said, you know, what am I not good at? I'm going to spin that a little differently to, what am I not excellent at? Because again, people take it in kind of the wrong way. It's like, well, you're getting started and I'm just going to do the things I'm good at. It's like, no, when you're just getting started, you're going to do everything, yeah, right? You're going to be the chief executive officer and the chief garbage taker outer. That's how it works. And then over time, you start outsourcing or delegating the stuff that you can delegate and get a good job done, right? Not always the stuff you don't like. You know, I don't like finances. I held on to the finances till we were more than a $500,000 a year company. And I still manage the cash flow myself. We're a multi-million dollar company now. Because, not because I like it, but because it's important. And you've got to do what's important sometimes. What am I not great at? I think design is a really good example of that. I'm kind of just good enough to be dangerous, meaning I have an eye for design and I can work Photoshop or PowerPoint a little bit. But if I try to do it myself, it's going to look crappy and it's going to take way too long. But that's just a technical skill. I think, let me think in terms of, like, what's a good example? I don't know. What do other guests point to when you ask them this question?
Some people sort of evade the question, and then other people know exactly what it is they're not good at. And oftentimes they found that out too late in their business. They held on to it because they didn't want to admit that they were no good at it. And so I love the question because it counterpoints the, what are you good at? What's your one thing? Although there's never just one thing, of course. That's not the point of that question either. But it's self-awareness, right? We need to know our weaknesses as much as we need to know our strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who says they don't have any weaknesses, it's kind of like, well, you're not telling me the truth or yourself. One of the two of us.
Well, it's like a job interview, right? It's like, you know, oh, I work too damn hard. Just, I'm a perfectionist. I'm too committed to the companies that I work for.
Yeah, I'm looking for something more specific than I work too hard. Like what, so let's maybe rephrase the question as, what's the first person you hired in your company that you were like, okay, I need somebody, or I can, as you say, delegate this and have this person run that part for me?
That's a really good question, because the first few people that I hired were all generalists, right? So basically people that I could do everything they were doing and I could do it better. And that's because when you're an entrepreneur, you're building something to begin with, the first thing you need is to expand your bandwidth. It was around our fifth or sixth hire where I started hiring specialists. And I'm not going to point to, you know, we hired a designer, we had a programmer, like just technical skills that I didn't have. But I think those aren't the traps. If you clearly can't do something, you're not going to try to do it yourself. I think the real danger is not the stuff you're bad at, but the stuff that you're not particularly good at. That's the stuff that you're going to hang on to for way too long. And you know, finance management is a good example of this. You know, I can do a pretty decent job. I'm good at keeping track of numbers in my head. And I was managing our finances myself and doing a pretty decent job of it in my head and on Excel till we were kind of $500,000, a little more than that per year company. And I always knew the numbers within a margin of, let's say, 10 or 15%. Except that give or take 10 or 15%, when you're doing $500,000 a year, that kind of adds up to a lot of money, right? And I probably should have handed that off a lot sooner. So that's an example. I don't know if this is a useful answer. I'm just, something about the question is throwing me off.
No, and no, it's a super useful answer. It's just the fact that you are sort of going over it now from looking back and you're trying to figure out why you did what you did. That's, to me, that's a very, very useful answer. It really just shows that we don't need to know everything going forward. You're going to figure this stuff out as you go. And lots of times looking back, what we did either makes sense or doesn't make sense, but we can learn from it and move forward with that.
I think, so I don't know if it's a weakness, but definitely a mistake that I've made is I'm good at figuring things out myself, kind of hacking together something that's good enough. And I think I leaned on good enough for way too long rather than going for excellent. It's why my website didn't work as well as I wanted it to for a long time. It's why our site didn't look as good as I wanted it to for a long time. It's why we didn't achieve things that I would have liked to, because on a whole bunch of different levels, I kind of went for what is good. Now, you know, we've grown a lot and we've done well, and it's hard to separate out what success is because of and what success is in spite of. And that's a trap of all entrepreneurs. But something I've been learning a lot more to do is that, you know, it's worth paying premium prices and top dollar to get something done really, really well. And it's worth investing in someone who knows how to do something excellently over doing it yourself kind of well.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And unfortunately, we don't always have the resources to hire the very best when we're starting out, but I guess hire the best within your resource bandwidth.
Well, a good analogy for that is, you know, if you're moving into a new place and you want it to be really nice, get one piece of really nice furniture and everything else can be crappy. And when you can afford one more, you'll replace that one. And over the course of a few years, you're going to end up with a really nice place, as opposed to getting, you know, really crappy everything. And then slightly less crappy everything, and then slightly less crappy everything. There's a cost to all that turnover. There's a cost, all the effort going in not the best place. And just we don't calculate it.
That's an awesome analogy. The furniture analogy. I love it. All right, we're going to move to projects. And I'll use this term loosely, but the very beginning you said you like to act from a place of what's next. And then you like to be the person, or you can react better to mistakes if you are the person standing in the front of the room and all your team is looking at you for guidance. You can react well. So I want to know, within your business now, as you said, a multi-million dollar business with probably a fairly substantial team behind it, a project can be anything within Firepole that you want to now decide to put your resources, your time, your money into. I want to know the thought process, or if you have a written process that goes into this, Danny, of how you decide that a project is something worth your time, energy, and money.
It's a great question. I don't have a written process. And my wife, who is my business partner, who runs currently growth on the team, she's going to hate my answer. But a lot of it comes down to my gut. If something I'll validate and I'll explore and I'll do the research and all that. But a lot of it comes down to, does this feel like there's an opportunity here? Does this feel like it's worth exploring? And I'll try to put boundaries on that in terms of, you know, what are the parameters of this experiment? How much are we investing before we know if it's working or not? But yeah, a lot of it comes down to gut.
Yeah. And it that seems to be the answer that I get almost all the time from people. I don't think I've actually interviewed one person who said they have a written process for it yet, but everybody wants one.
I don't want one.
No?
I know my wife doesn't like that, you know, it is my gut and it's so imprecise and hard to quantify, but, you know, we're a multi-million dollar company and 5 years ago there was nothing. I think my gut has done okay.
A little bit cocky. I like it. It's good.
Well, it's not true. I haven't made mistakes. I've made very expensive mistakes. And I certainly put, like I said, we do the research, we put the parameters. I want to minimize the risk. But I think these processes, they're good at minimizing risk. They're not good at engineering inspiration.
Okay, and then let's take it a step further. So your gut tells you this project is worth doing. At what point do you, I guess you could also tell me at the same time whether you believe in the whole Seth Godin's the dip, like where you're pushing through something where your gut tells you this is the right thing to do, but it just needs more time. And on the other side is huge success with this project. At what point do you go from gut to analytics and actual hard data telling you that, no, Danny, this is not the right thing? And your wife's like, come on, man, this is no. But you're like, no, my gut says, is there a time? Is there a time where you switch from gut to metrics? Or is it just at some point your gut will tell you that, no, that was a mistake and let's see where to go from here?
I'd flip that around a bit. I think you run the metrics from the beginning and it's really about how long can the metrics suck and you're going to let your gut override it. And that's a gut question. It helps to have smart people around you who don't necessarily agree with you. You know, I have these conversations with my leadership team and especially with my wife. And often it's like, you know, well, we're doing this project, we haven't gotten good results. And I'll be like, I think there's something there. I feel like we haven't, and there's got to be a reason why. Right? I feel like we haven't resourced it properly. I feel like we haven't, you know, explored this enough. And ultimately, you know, if it's gone on long enough, we'll be like, well, okay, well, what do we do? How do we either know that it's working or know that it's not? And I think the solution isn't to, this is just a takeaway for me lately. It's that if you want to shorten the runway, you've got to resource the project properly. A sure way to live in the dip for a long, long time is to half-ass your way through a project, kind of do it on the side. And so more and more, if we want to try something and like, you know, I want to get behind it properly, I want to put the resources to do it well so that in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or whatever it is, if it didn't work, I know that we gave it a good shot. So it didn't work and we can decide what to do next. People think that the worst thing is that a project fails, and it's not. The worst thing is that you're kind of in no man's land and you don't know. You're like, you know, we've been doing this for 9 months, but, you know, did it fail or did we just not do it right? I don't really know. Like, that's the worst thing.
So very, very, very well said. Danny, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on something I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, right, we have these dreams and these goals that we're always setting into the future, which I totally agree we have to. But it's always in 3 months when my business does this, or in 6 months when this book comes out, or when I launch this new project in 9 months, that's when I'll be successful. And before we even get to those goals, we set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. I find that we live in this gap where we fail often to turn around and look at where we've come from, and we're always just looking forward and we're stuck in between both of them. I would love, Danny, you've come from 15 years old to now running a multi-million dollar company, and you've done a lot of impressive things, written some amazing books, and I would love for you to stop right now, turn around, look at where you've come from, what you've learned, the struggles, the failures, and tell me just how you feel about everything up till this moment.
I feel great about it. I love that you asked this question because I think you're right. None of us do it nearly as often as we should. A long time ago, I had a vision of, I want to build a company where people are excited to come to work on Monday morning. And that's what I've built. You know, my team is amazing. and people love the work that they're doing, and we're serving an amazing community that's doing amazing things in the world. Am I satisfied with where we are? Am I satisfied with our scale or where I want us to end up? Not even close. We haven't even scratched the surface. But we've built something great. Even on the hardest days, I'm very happy about that.
That's awesome. And you very, very, very much should be proud of it. Danny, we've got to talk about your business in passing, but could you tell the listener specifically where to find out more about you and your business?
Sure. I mean, if you just Google me, they used to call me the Freddy Krueger of blogging because I was everywhere. So you'll find me. But probably one of the best places for you to go and discover my work is my podcast. It's called Business Reimagined. And it's free, obviously. It's a podcast, but it's one of, I think, the best pieces of content I'm producing right now. So I would go there and yeah, I think that's the best place to start. And of course, my book's on Amazon.
Awesome. I will link to your books. I will link to your podcast and to firepolemarketing.com is the main hub. Check out Danny's work because it is really, really, really awesome. So Danny, thank you so much for stopping by today. Thank you for the amazing conversation. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
John, I'm super grateful for the opportunity and for your friendship. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Danny, thank you so much for joining me. That was a lot of fun. So you're out there listening and wow, Danny Eney he's someone I've known now for about the last year and a half. And I mean, he's a brilliant person to know and you can get to know him just by going to his site, reading Firepole Marketing, reading his books. He's a smart, smart, generous, generous person. And I've been waiting for this conversation for a long time. So I'm really, really happy and I'm really happy with where it went. And I knew Danny would over deliver. He always does, doesn't he? It was awesome. And he said the one thing that actually like gave me goosebumps that I mentioned during the conversation. He said it so emphatically how he is an entrepreneur. He's born an entrepreneur. And although you know that I disagree with being born an entrepreneur, some people just have it. That's just how it's going to be. And it's known, but that doesn't have to be how it's going to be. But I do love that about Danny. But then there was something else that he said that really, it stuck out to me and it's really got me thinking. And it was just that one thing that came out of the conversation and it's just going back and forth in my head, back and forth and back and forth. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
A sure way to live in the dip for a long, long time is to half-ass your way through a project, kind of do it on the side. And so more and more, if we want to try something and like, I want to get behind it properly. I want to put the resources to do it well so that in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or whatever it is, if it didn't work, I know that we gave it a good shot. So it didn't work and we can decide what to do next. People think that the worst thing is that a project fails and it's not. The worst thing is that you're kind of in no man's land and you don't know. You're like, we've been doing this for 9 months, but, did it fail or did we just not do it right? I don't really know. Like, that's the worst thing.
And that's the hack. Danny. Thank you. This is awesome. I love this because I talk about The Dip a lot. If you haven't read The Dip by Seth Godin, you have to read it. It's super short. It's easy read. You can read it in an evening. And it's really about this struggle of pushing through. But Danny has a great, I love the take on it because there's a sure way to live in the dip, which is the place you absolutely do not want to live. But lots of us live in that because we don't want to put all of our time and all of our effort into something. I don't know if it's because we're afraid of success or if it's because we're afraid of failure, but we half-ass it or we do it on the side. And so when Danny says do something on the side, doesn't mean that if you have a job, that you can't have a side project that gets your full attention, which you can. You just have to, unfortunately, work in the other 8 hours where you're not working your actual job or where you're not sleeping. There's another 8 hours there that we waste a lot of time in doing things. But if we want something bad enough, we will focus and do it and work that other 8 hours until it succeeds. And it's this idea that Danny brings, which is, to me, it even goes even bigger. This is why I build things. This is why I create something out of nothing, because I honestly don't want to be on my deathbed and wonder what I could have done. What could I have built and what could I have done if I pushed it as hard as I could and what could I have accomplished? I hate that feeling of wondering that about things. That's why things like Hack the Entrepreneur that I wanted to do for 3 months and just get to talk to some smart people selfishly and have these cool conversations, when it started to get an audience, I just decided to put my head down and go for it and push it as far as it can go because I want to see how far it can go. And it's amazing to see. And I didn't want to be 2 years down the line and be like, oh, I wonder what could have happened if I would have just not just half-assed it and actually went for it flat out. That's awesome. That's a cool, cool feeling. And this is a decision you have to make at some point about things. And then, as Danny then goes further on to say, it's not about it being the wrong decision. It's about actually finding out whether it's the right or wrong decision in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, whatever that happens to be. But you know you went all resources in. You devoted as much time and effort as you could. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Big deal. You know that you pushed it as far as it could go. It's logical ending. And that's, to me, that's a great place to be. Whether that's success or not, that is success in the way that you've now pushed it as far as it can go. And this is where you will find happiness. This is where you'll find success in however you want to define success for yourself. But it's not half-assing it, not continuously living in the dip because you're afraid to push it as far as it can go. Danny, thank you so very, very, very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. I thank you so much for joining me again. It's been a blast. As always, hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website, as you probably know. If you don't, please get onto my email list. There's a place right at the top for email. I send out an email every Sunday, my best writing that I'm working on. I'll send it to you. It's going to give you the motivation to kind of stop living in the dip and to push forward as you need to do. And I'm also working on, I'm just about to start a really cool project that I think you will really like. And it's going to, I think it's really going to help you. And I'm going to be asking for some feedback and getting some people possibly to help me in there. So get on that list and yeah, we'll work together and create something cool. All right. This has been fun. Thank you so very, very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.